Welcome to Make Your Wealth Work, the podcast where wealth becomes your greatest ally in achieving your dreams.
Hey guys, welcome back. You're listening to the second part of last week's episode. Let's jump back in.
Your kids are about the age of my grandkids. Mm-hmm. My twins are 8 years old. And I have a heart for giving. You know, I want to give. And like you just said, the key is you got to be able to give. Mm-hmm. Right? If you give until you're in the poorhouse, that might be what God wants you to do. And that's just fine. But for me, I want to make myself healthier and healthier and healthier so that I can give more and more and more. A friend of mine defined a capital as the ability to do good. And that's my favorite definition of capital I've ever heard. Capital is the ability to do good. And the more capital you have, the more good you can do. Mm-hmm. Now, just, I want to stay on the same point about this human life value. Human life value, it's taught in the American College of Financial Planning. A life insurance company, as distant as they may appear to some people, a life insurance company that doesn't even know you will look at a person and insure you, assuming you could pass the physical and you have the financial wherewithal, et cetera, et cetera. They'll insure you for a multiple of your income. Let's say you're 30 years old and you make $100,000 a year. What they're saying is, your life, as far as the insurable value, the maximum potential of your life, is $3 million. And so I asked the question of the wife. I have to ask the wife if the husband is the main earner. If John were not here, he had his worst day yesterday, and he's graduated, he's gone, call it anything you like, how much of his income would you want to continue? All of it? Some of it? None of it. And last week, I had someone say to me, at least all of it. Mm-hmm. Well, if that's the case, and an insurance company will insure that 30-year-old for about 30 times income, well, that $3 million is not necessarily too much. Because think about it, you would have to earn, let's say, 3.5% on $3 million, right? I'm not going to drive you crazy with math. 3.5% on $3 million is about $100,000 a year in income. That doesn't even account for inflation increases, right? So what I'm saying is $3 million isn't all she wrote, because as you get older, yeah, when you're 40, they might not give you 30 times, but when you're 40, you might be earning 200,000. Okay? So if you're earning 200,000 and they'll only insure you for 20 times, 20 times 2 is $4 million. Right? As we get older and as we earn more, the multiple leading to that insurance amount gets bigger, it doesn't get smaller. So there's some talking head out there that talks about, he doesn't call it this, but I refer to it as the theory of diminishing responsibility. Mm-hmm. As we get older, we're going to owe less people. We're going to care about less people. We're going to have fewer causes to contribute to. We're going to have fewer things we want to support. Really? I haven't found that to be the case.
Right.
And then that 45-year-old, when I talked to him about what we could insure him for, was very eager to have that coverage because he loved his family, right? Now let's look at a model that could take care of protection. And I'm talking about some protection, because you're not going to use one product to do everything in your life, right? Mm-hmm. Your car insurance is not going to pay your medical bills, right? Your homeowner's insurance is not going to cover your boat, right? Your disability insurance isn't going to pay a life insurance benefit, right? You have all these different elements. But a properly designed life insurance policy is going to cover some of the need for replacing income at death. It's going to cover some of the need for building up value on a guaranteed basis over decades, right? And I know I sound like a commercial right now, but I believe in this stuff and I own it. And when people ask me, I will show them, generally speaking, what my program looks like. Somebody taught me when I was first in the business, show people your portfolio. I do. I show people my portfolio. I'll share some of the companies and what these companies do, companies that I've built up, some companies I continue to own, some companies I've sold off. I've created financial opportunities. So protection, savings, growth. With the model that we put together, you can begin to touch all these bases, which is pretty fascinating because most people don't want to become financial PhDs, but they'd like to have something that's solid, that's secure, that's conservative, that won't go backwards with the stock market, for example. They want to have some place where they can access money if they need it. They want to have access to a credit line where they won't be subject to ridiculous fees and interest costs that fluctuate all over the place. So I know I'm all over the board, but I mean, what if you set up a credit line and for the next, 40 years, you could borrow against this asset for 4%, period, fixed, guaranteed, no matter what happens. Oh, by the way, it's interest only. You determine when you want to repay the principal back to free up the lien that's been placed against your insurance. And I know I'm just touching on things that need to be dealt with more systematically. But, and this happens because I get very excited about what I do. Mm-hmm. And every time I meet with a client or help a client, I always want to go back and remind myself what I'm doing for myself, make sure I'm doing the right thing for myself, and make sure that if I give a client a piece of advice about how they could run their banking system, that I'm doing for myself what I'm telling people mm-hmm. that they should consider as well.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think there's too much of a better choice one can make in their life is setting up systems like this in their own life, for their own families, for, you know, it's a mental shift, right? It's not the way we're taught growing up typically.
For sure.
On how to handle, how to even think about money, you know, and we don't ask enough questions in general. I never asked any of these questions before I got into it. I didn't care, frankly, but I was always like, well, how come I can never get ahead? You know, and when I read about this Parkinson's law, it made total sense. It wasn't just a simple, oh, well, you don't save enough. It's more than that. It's about changing the way you think. It's like a heart change. You know, if you're a person of faith, it's a similar thing where you have the heart change and the actions will follow.
So what flipped the switch for you? What got you interested in kind of running on this track?
Well, yeah. So I got into this. I actually was listening to a podcast and I heard a guy talking about how you could pay down debt and build up a pool of cash value at the same time. And it was interesting to me, but I didn't believe him. I said, that's not how it works. You pay down your debt and then you begin saving. So you have this linear thought process, you know, that you go through on how you get ahead, right? Let's pay down debt, then build up. And so I called him and I said, okay, show me. I have debt that I need to get out of. And I have debt. I was a, we'll call it a starving artist. I had a thriving sporting events photography business. And I did that for 20 years. And anyway, so I had debt. So I called him. He showed me how it works, taught me a little bit about infinite banking, said, get this book, Becoming Your Own Banker. You need to read it. It's 92 pages long, you know? And I'm like, I can handle 92 pages. Okay, mm-hmm. Fair enough. And so we worked through this. He showed me the process. He built out a system for me to how I can start a policy and use that to recapture debt. And I didn't understand it through and through and through. I understood it enough to know, okay, on paper, this makes total sense. And I'm going to trust the process, you know, while I'm continuing to learn. Because Joe, as you and I know, we've been doing this long enough. We're still learning.
Mm-hmm. Every day.
You know, and so I think people feel like, you know, like I did, like you want to feel like you need to know everything before you can start into it. But it's just understand it enough. You need to understand it enough to know why you're doing it. But trust the process. If the numbers make sense, the numbers don't lie. You know, and so anyway, so he built this out. I implemented it. I started a little $400 a month policy with it. And never in a million years, if you'd have told me back then, hey, 7, 8, 10 years from now, you're going to be doing this full-time as a career, teaching people around the country about infinite banking, I'd have been like, you're crazy. There's no way. And here we are. You just never know. And it was so fascinating to watch it unfold and watch my debt go down and my cash value go up at the same time. And I was just, wow, it really changed. That's what triggered it. To once I saw it really happening, you know, mm-hmm. It's kind of like when you go on a diet and you're losing weight, you're kind of, yeah, okay. You're hopeful in the beginning, you know, but then once you start stepping on that scale every day and you see those pounds dropping off, then all of a sudden you're super motivated and you're like, oh my goodness, this is awesome. And I think that's what happens with policies. As you see it unfolding through the years, even the first year, you see it start working, you know, and then you're like, oh wow, you know, I love there's another gentleman that I work with often from a client perspective. He says it best. He says, once you see it, you cannot unsee it. And I love that quote. And it's so true, because that's exactly what happened for me. It was like, once I saw it, things clicked, the light bulb went on, and then an explosion of other ideas came out of that. Like, oh, well, if it works this way, then that means I could probably do this or that or the other, you know, and then you start building from there.
So that leads me to bring up this very important, very touchy word called control.
Mm-hmm.
Right. When somebody doesn't feel that they are in control of their own lives, their own finances, their own situations, their own employment, when they don't feel they're in control, they're going to feel like they have a scarcity of something. So if you're not in control, the opposite of that is you're under the control of somebody else. So if you're under the control of somebody else, your finances are something beyond your control, and you're a victim of your finances. See, so it's kind of a vicious circle. Now, all of a sudden, if you're not in control of where you live, how you earn, how you spend, that means you're not in control of your future. Now, I understand that no man, no woman is promised tomorrow, but we're talking about the way you want to approach your life and your future. And that's a lie. By the way, that's a lie. You know, the scarcity mentality is a lie. And that is the force of someone, something else, telling you that you're not enough, you don't have enough, you're not in control, there's nothing you can do about this. Well, I was a poster child for Parkinson's Law, and probably still am, by the way. And a long time ago, 30 plus years ago, I said to my wife, you know what? We've got some debt. We've got some financial pressures on us. And I know there's only a limited amount of ways that we can improve our financial picture. One is we can spend less. Well, at the moment, back then, there wasn't really much we could spend less on. There wasn't much we could cut. I mean, we were living bare bones 36 years ago. So number one, we can cut expenses. Can't cut much expenses in our situation. Number two, we could earn more on the money that we have invested. That wasn't an issue for me because I had no money invested.
Yeah.
And number three, I could earn more. And so you've got to apply that model and have a meeting with yourself and decide, what of these three things can I do? Maybe I can do all three, right? But the one thing that you can't do and expect change is the same thing that you did yesterday. So you have a meeting with yourself and decide, listen, I've got an extra 15 hours a week. I can go do something. I can do a home-based business. I can do consulting. I can get a second job. I can figure that out. I've got hours where I can be creative, where I can be productive, where I can produce something for myself or someone else, and I can bring more dollars into this equation. Well, maybe at the same time, I can get more efficient with the money that I have coming in so that it won't go out as fast as it was, right? And there's a whole conversation we should have and can have about the purpose of a savings account, the purpose of a checking account. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, and I've been listening to people use these descriptions for the past months and months and months, a checking account is a mandate to spend. Mm-hmm. If I put that money in my checking account, I don't want it to sit there. It right. needs to go out. I got a bonus of some kind. Some unexpected money came in. What's the first thing you think of? Where am I going to send it? Mm-hmm. What am I going to buy? What am I going to spend it on? Mm-hmm. What trip are we going to make? And believe me, I think of this too, right? Extra money comes in. And then conversely, on the savings side, I put money in the savings. What's my impression? You know, what's my knee-jerk reaction? Money in savings. Oh, man, it's boring. Mm-hmm. It's not earning any interest. How long does my money have to sit in savings before I can do something with it? What do you mean, do something with it? Well, put it in the checking so I can send it out. Mm-hmm. Well, what's the another piece that everybody uses that's part of this Monopoly board? It's a credit card because, you know, mm-hmm. if I put that expenditure on a credit card and I have the money in checking, I can go and have a nice weekend, spend a few $1,000, and then come back and pay my credit card with the money in my checking. And if I don't have enough money in my checking, I can move it from savings. So see, both these accounts are kind of designed to help you fail. And in my view, you have to change your thinking, as Jason is reminding me all the time. If you change your thinking, you change your life, right? Change the way you think about the money sitting, quote unquote, sitting in savings. Change the way you're thinking about your checking account and the purpose of it, right? I mean, we're going back to fundamentals here.
Yep.
There are numerous items along the way where your thinking may be wrong. Your attitude may be wrong. You may feel like you don't deserve a better break. You may feel like this is your lot in life. You know what? It's only your lot in life if you chose that. We make thousands and thousands of choices all the time. And those choices direct our destiny. I mean, one of the most important things that you can do is decide for yourself that you are in control.
That's right. It's a game changer.
Game changer. Mm-hmm. So we're going to continue these conversations. And, you know, for me, I want to use this as an opportunity to encourage people. I don't want you to be beat up by the financial talking heads out there. I don't want you to believe that you need some expert to tell you what to do. We can show you what we're doing for ourselves. We're implementing something that we know works because we've had it work in our own lives for decades. So this is not like some thing that I'm getting paid to market and I get paid for that. We're putting way more value into our clients' lives than we are taking out, right? There's a book called The Go-Giver by Bob Berg. And one of the principles is that you always want to give more in value than you receive in compensation. And that's one of my truths that I operate. I always want to make sure that we're giving more in value And by helping our clients understand that finance and economics and stewardship and money and wealth are not above our understanding. You don't need a PhD. You don't need an MBA. You don't need a master's degree. You don't need college.
You don't need to be wealthy already.
There you go. There is wealth in every single person.
Yeah.
And in many cases, the financial element is suppressing and suffocating a person's creativity in other areas. And so I'm all about freedom. I'm all about liberty. I'm all about control. I'm all about helping you have more choices that you determine for yourself and helping you unshackle from, you know, from the chains, the handcuffs that have been put on you. And honestly, we've put those handcuffs on ourselves 99% of the time. I did it. Most of the people I know who are in our business, our colleagues, they did it. And they've learned through trial and error how to climb out of that hole. And now that we've learned about this treasure, we want to share it because it works, because it's simple, because it's honest, because it has an amazing track record of success.
That's right.
Closing thoughts, Jason.
I think just as you were talking, the thing that comes to mind is what we talked about earlier is that self-elimination. People self-eliminate. That this can be done in their own lives. And I'm constantly practically pleading with people, don't self-eliminate. Like if you can't do it, we're going to let you know. We're going to show you why maybe right now is not possible, and we'll tell you, but then we'll show you a path forward. You know, it's not, yeah, sorry, you don't make enough, see you later. It's not like that. Because no matter what, even if, let's say you pick up the book, Becoming Your Own Banker, and you read it, and you want to implement it in your own life. Mm-hmm. But let's say monetarily speaking, you can't do it right now. Can you still learn? Can you still grow from that knowledge? Can you still apply a lot of that book in your life moving forward? Absolutely. And begin the change, you know? Or as we talked about, maybe you can help the next generation, if nothing else, or those around you, if nothing else. And I think that's what it boils down to.
For my part, I think I come across two kinds of people. One is the person who has a lot of assets, a high net worth. They've built up their company, their business, their family assets over a long period of time. And literally what we do with those kinds of people is we help them preserve what they've created against the ravages of assault from creditors, predators, in-laws and outlaws, as well as from the various types of taxes, okay, federal estate tax, inheritance taxes, et cetera. And the other group of people is made up of people who don't have an estate. They don't have $100,000 to leave their kids. They don't have a model. They wouldn't know how to teach their kids the wisdom. So like you're saying, we want to help you create a state if you don't have one and protect an estate if you do have one. So wherever you're at, we can have a conversation with you and offer you some direction, have an open conversation about what you might want to accomplish and see how we can help you. So thanks for tuning in. This is Make Your Wealth Work. And we look forward to having you follow us and talk to you next time.
This is thepodcastfactory.com.